Live on investtalk.com and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP Financial President, Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of Invest Talk. It's now March 25th, 2015. We only have a few more days left in the trading quarter, or trading month, and the trading quarter, first quarter of the year. And then we're going to get the first quarter GDP numbers, gross domestic product. I always find those interesting. Try to remember they always revise them. They're going to revise fourth quarter GDP numbers for the last time here pretty soon. So don't think we even actually know exactly what the fourth quarter was of last year yet, 3 months into this year. But the first number is usually within striking distance of what the actual GDP, gross domestic product number, will be in the quarter. So I always look forward to the first quarter's GDP. We'll see that in a couple weeks. Today we had durable goods numbers that weren't very good. We've had the last 4 months, three down shrinkage in durable goods sales. That's not good. And it was surprisingly sharply lower today. And that turned the market down, by the way, when that happened. So I always welcome everybody for our one-hour conference on the radio here. We welcome you to bring your money questions. We talk most about investing, but that's just one leg in the money management tool. Managing risk has a great deal to do with the construction of your portfolio. How much risk are you willing to take? People say, I'm willing to take a lot of risk, I'm willing to take this much risk, and then when that always is true and they're happy and content when the market goes up. But the risk-taking is much more focused when the market goes down. You got to stay away from the emotions, the emotion part. And people get wrapped up in the emotions on the upside. They get wrapped up on the good news, and then they get wrapped up in the bad news. And you, after two of those cycles up and down, then you get a really good idea of how much risk they really want to take. The goal of an average investor is to weed out all emotion. That's what your job is. Pay attention to what really matters, which is the ability of the companies you buy to make money, to build wealth. And it's not all about price movement. It's not all about price. During times of market excess, you observe signs that, you know, that we're going to talk about that today. I'm going to look back at the 2000, and one of my talking points is going to be, are we looking at another crash like we did the NASDAQ when it reached, you know, recently NASDAQ reached 5,000. Last time it was that high before the 2000.com crash. Are we at the numbers? And we're going to talk about that. One interesting sign of excess may or may not be valid is the content produced by media companies. Movies are kind of indicators of the public psyche. 1987, a movie called Wall Street was released right before the market collapsed. In 2000, Boiler Room debuted in theaters just a few weeks before the NASDAQ bubble popped. In 2008, Wall Street 2 began filming, but was released in 2010, right before the financial crisis. It was started to be made in 2008, but didn't get released. How about Wolf of Wall Street? It was a big hit recently. Does that mean the market is topping? It's hard to know. It is kind of interesting, though. These movies come out when everybody's excited about the market. So where is our head today? Your job as investors to try to recognize what the market is operating in, what kind of environment it is in. Is it too attractive, not attractive enough? How about Europe? Is that attractive or not attractive? The most successful investors in history have always been ones that are willing and able to pick up shares of stocks after they've been crushed. Irrational pessimism. How about in 1997 when then Federal Reserve Chairman, what was his name? Anyways, remember he said we were at irrational exuberance 2 years before the top of the market? Are we there? We don't know. So we're here to help you make those kind of decisions or not make those kinds of decisions of what to do. But we're really here to help you sharpen your tools, to help you gain knowledge. And it's time for the first call. Let's do that before I get carried away. Our number is 888-99-CHART. I hope you'll use it and give me a call. Let's take this first question from our 24-hour listener line.
My name is DJ. I really enjoy your show. What is your views on long-term insurance? Thanks. Bye.
Now, I have an insurance background. I started my career in insurance. What's my view of long-term care insurance, I think he was? I'm not a big fan of it. I understand that people like it. I'm not a big fan of it because the premium's pretty high. The coverage doesn't cover everything. There's a waiting period. There's certain things I don't like about it. It's a contract with the insurance company. There's things I do like about it, but the time I needed it from my brother who lived with me before he passed away, my younger brother, it didn't really help. It really didn't pay for much or anything at all. And as you get older, the costs go up. And as you get older, the more likely you'll need it. And the costs go up, and here you are reaching retirement, costs, the premiums are rising, and a premium you can't really afford anymore, and then you cancel it, and then you need the long-term care insurance. I'm just not a big fan of it. I'm just not. I'm not saying it's not right for some people, but I noticed probably I read something the other day that said that long-term care probably is not for the poor, not for the super rich, but more for the middle class people that are kind of on the wealthy side but not really wealthy, because they, you know, you don't want all your wealth destroyed if a family member needs long-term care. I don't know. Are you walking with the crowd or against it? For some, money is made by investing in the unexpected. Most others feel better by being led. That's one of our talking points today. Are you walking with the crowd or against the crowd? Other talking points. I want to talk about why that hasn't lower oil prices, lower fuel prices, lowered airline prices. Do we have something not good there? I think we ought to talk about that. Has the euro finally hit bottom? And I have told you that I think oil has probably hit as close to its low, and I think the dollar has finally hit its peak and the euro probably hit its bottom, and I think that's true. So I want to talk about that, why that might be so. And are we looking at another crash as like the NASDAQ as it reaches 5,000 did in 2000? Well, I'm going to make some comparisons between now and 2000, because some of the numbers are not adding up to that kind of bubble territory. So let's talk about some of the numbers and see. Not saying that the market's not overvalued, because I actually think it is somewhat here in the United States. But I want to make some comparison with the numbers from there to here, because I don't think we're looking at a bubble. I'm just thinking we're looking at a little overvaluations. And how about the Greek versus the European Union? Greece is back in the news. I know not a lot of people are talking about it, but I think we should discuss it. And will it have as big an impact now as it did a few years ago on the market when they first started bailing out Greece? I really don't think there is going to be that big of an impact, but it's going to be an impact. Those are things I want to talk about today, if we can get to them. Hopefully we can get to them. But, of course, you know, your calls come first. What do you want to talk about? What did the market do today? The Dow was down 292 points. The NASDAQ is down 118 points. That's a 2% fall. And the S&P 500 was down 31. The market wasn't acting this poorly at the opening. It actually was up at the opening. It was kind of, but then turned sour, but not this bad. This is kind of accelerated as the day went on. Why? Well, we did have a durable goods report that was weak, but I don't think there was any really reason other than the market went right up to its top again, right where it's been struggling to stay, and fell off again. I think that's about the only thing you can really say that, is there a problem? Is the market ready to crash? No, it's just getting tired. It's getting tired at these tops. It's still in an upward trend. Even after today, it's still an upward trend. is above its 50-day moving average, above 100-day moving average, and the S&P 500 is anyways. But and it's right at the 50-day moving average, right above the 100-day, and it's above the 200-day moving average. So you can't really say it's not. It's still in an upward trend. In October, we had almost a 10% correction. We haven't, you know, we're probably due for another one, 10. We're due for a 10 to 20% correction, everybody. And here we are, end of March, moving into April. Remember that old saying, go away in May? Because the summer months usually has a decent-sized correction and are usually weaker. I don't think it's something to really be scared. You can have some defensive positions. We have defensive positions, some. You know, we're fully in the market, but we have some defensive divisions. Now, we're up for the year. We're not up big for the year, the first 3 months of the year. But our defensive positions hold us up on days like today, when that's pretty bad. Getting a big tax refund this year? Well, last year, too, you're probably having too much deducted from your account. I hate giving Uncle Sam more money than he's supposed to have. It's one way to save money, but not the best way, because Uncle Sam does not pay anything on the money, extra money they keep of yours. It's better to manage your savings directly. Want to talk about it? 888-99-CHART. You can reach me right now or anytime, really. You know, there was an article in the New York Times a couple days ago about, and it pointed out something I never really gave much thought to, but it did kind of make me think, and that is oil prices have fallen almost in half, right? And one of the highest, largest expense for airlines is fuel prices, and yet airline ticket prices have not gone down even a little. Why is that? Maybe we don't have much competition. Too many mergers. Only three or four major airlines. Let's talk to James in New York. How are you doing, James? Thanks for calling. James, you there?
Yes, hello. How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling, James. Appreciate it.
Good. Listen, I have a question today. I know the Kraft Heinz merger was a big deal today. Now, I'm just curious from my own personal situation. I own 50 shares of Kraft presently.
Okay.
So with this merger, what does that mean for me?
Okay, that means if the merger goes through, you will get the exact price of what the merger deal was. And I'm not sure of the exact amount. I really am not. The stock price went up to, as of $87.50 in the middle of the day, but dropped down to $83 as a close. So it really went. It's normal when a merger occurs or is announced, that the price goes up to about 10% of the merger price. That's normal. Now you have to wait to see if the deal goes through. If it does, you get exactly what the price they said will happen, okay, at that point. But you have a waiting period. You have several things that can go wrong. What if during the waiting period the deal doesn't go through? What if it's not approved by the board of directors of either one? Or you can have a sweetened offer. That could happen, but that's more rare, but that could happen. So if the deal doesn't go through, the stock goes right back down to where it is. So if you're a holder of the stock, what I would normally do is sell it. As soon as that announcement comes out, I sell it. That's what I would do. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it, James. This is Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
Our Invest Talk podcast distribution is made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. We ask you to save the date, April 25th at the San Jose Hyatt House. It's our Saturday morning wealth conference, and this one is designed to broaden your view of the investing landscape and uncover some expanding opportunities. We'll have more about that on the next podcast.
888-99-CHART. There's an article on CityWire put out this month, earlier in the month, by Mark Lipper analyst. I don't know if they're pretty big. Anyways, the article is entitled Modern Investor's Hard Search for Value. And it gives you a little history. It talks about George Soros, Warren Buffett, but also goes back to who taught Warren Buffett and George Soros about buying stocks. Back to Benjamin Graham, who was in the Depression era guy. And there's a book, The Intelligent Investor, one of the best books out there about value investing. And they were talking about value in this market, and whether there's value in the market and how to find it and how difficult it was. And just to give you an idea, you know, back in the old days, you know, they used the term book value quite often in valuating a stock. Book value is when you sold everything out, sold everything the company had, all its buildings, all its land, all its product, how much per share would you get? And that would be the book value of the company. And back then, you know, back when good old Ben Graham's days, you wanted to buy a stock below book value. Good luck with that today. There's very few stocks that you can find even close to book value. And now the number is like 2 times the book value. You know, for instance, Kraft Foods, just so you know, 8 times book value. 8 times book value. Okay, so it's not easy finding value in stocks. Apple, 6 times book value. How about GE? It is trading at 2 times book value. So 2 times book value is a good valuation these days. Does that mean stocks are overvalued? Well, not necessarily so. We were a much more manufacturing society when they were learning that in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. We were a manufacturing society, not a service sector society. And this day and age with internet, value, what is the book value of intellectual, what's intellectual, well, how do you put a value on intellectual properties? It's difficult. They can be way overvalued or worth nothing. Depending on the new competition, it's very, very difficult. Finding value is difficult because you've got to set up your parameters of definition of value, and things change over time. Things do change, but book value is still used today, just not in the way it used to use. They used to use it. Now, where is value in the world today? Is our stock market way overvalued? That's going to be the topic of our next wealth conference, by the way. Finding value globally. I think it's going to be a really neat subject. We're going to be talking about that in the weeks coming up. InvestTalk is a two-way conversation, but if you have a question between programs, you still can ask, and we'll play it on the next InvestTalk. We're here for you at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Steve calling from Bend, Oregon, and I listen to your program on podcast. Enjoy it every day. I'm calling about Centene Corporation, Charlie, Nancy, Charlie. I'm looking for a long-term position in this stock, 10 years or more, and I was looking for a pullback, but there just doesn't seem to be one. I'm figuring I just might as well jump in, but I'd just like to know your take on it, and I appreciate your help. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bend, Oregon, beautiful place. My grandfather built his house in Bend, Oregon, right in the main street when there, he was like the third or fourth house on the main street. I remember visiting that house in Bend, Oregon. You know, now it's a city, but a beautiful area up in Bend, Oregon. CNC is the symbol. C as in cat, N as in Nancy, C as in cat. Centene Corporation. It is a $8.1 billion company, so it's not a tiny company. It's pretty decent size. Provides managed healthcare services through government subsidized programs. Huge growth, 50% a quarter in sales. Earnings have grown 11% up this year, then another 15% next year. And because of that huge growth, the stock, of course, has taken off and is trading at, you know, $68.83. From a year ago, 2 years ago, it was $20 a share stock. 2012 was a $12 low. Back in 2008, 2009, it was $6, $7, $8 was the low. And here it is today because of the growth. When you are getting 50% sales growth a quarter, you're going to have to pay up for that. So the P.E. ratio right now with an $68 stock making $3 is, you know, 22, 23. And then five-year average is 9 to 30. Return on equity is very good. It's a very good company. You want to buy this on any weakness, any pullback you get. It's had pullbacks. It had a pullback last August. Then we had the October pullback. Wasn't a lot. And the market went down 10%. This one went from 42 down to 37. Okay, so next time you get that kind of pullback, and you should get it within the next month or two or three, buy it. I would wait for a pullback, though, because it's just been marching up. Don't want to chase it. Coming up next half hour, are you pretty good at tracking your own money month to month? We have some ideas for you. If you're not so good at it, we have some ideas. That's coming up next on Invest Talk Personal. Chime in with your questions or comments anytime, 888-99-CHARGE. Chart. So how is the, I want to know, do you think the euro has finally hit bottom against the U.S. dollar? Now, you can watch the U.S. dollar on a chart, you know, by going, using the ETF, UUP, and that is the dollar value versus other currencies. And it's fallen sharply in the last week or two, finally, but before that, it spiked up and up and up and up. But so how do you know if it's fallen? If it's finally peaked. What are the reasons? It's been an eight-month rally from the dollar, very strong eight-month rally from a base. So how do you know? Well, we're looking at, look at some hedge funds. Hedge funds were shorting the euro. Okay, they still have lots of shorts on. They made a ton of money on the shorts. And in recent news in the last week or two, there's been upgrades on the EU economy. Have you noticed that? Saying that the EU economy, instead of being flat for this year, maybe grow 1 to 2%. And remember, as soon as those upgrades come in for the economy, that means the euro starts to stabilize and starts to gain strength. So those hedge funds are now going to get out of their shorts. They're shorting the euro. When that get out of a short means they have to buy the euro, which will give it strength. So there's one possible reason why the euro probably has bottomed, and therefore the dollar has probably topped. Also, another one, outflow of European stocks, equities, has slowed. There's still an outflow. In other words, people leaving the stock market out of the euro is now slowing. There's no longer a flood. It is now a trickle coming out of Europe. And there's been an increase and the outflow of fixed income portfolios in Europe. Remember we talked about this where you can't make any money in debt in Europe. I mean, they're not paying anything. So people are leaving it. Think about our QE program and their recent started QE program. What happened in our QE program? It drove down interest rates, right? That's what the QE did. Tried to drive down interest rates here in the United States. Well, in Europe, interest rates are already really low. But now they're negative. So their QE is driving it down to negative. So people are leaving. Why would you own debt in Europe? Why would you not? You wouldn't. You're going to buy something else. You're going to buy U.S. bonds, U.S. stocks, or you buy European stocks that have been beaten up because you certainly don't want to stay in the bonds. So maybe that tells you that the euro might be might have hit a bottom and the dollar has hit a top. Those are just a couple of things that kind of maybe tells me, and I'm sharing it with you, that the euro has finally hit bottom. It's done going down. And the dollar, for the time being, probably is done going up. It's going to stay strong. The dollar is not going to get like, oh, all of a sudden it's falling apart. No. I'm just saying, no one's going to have that maniac move up after 8 months. It's now going to give back some of that and then start to move sideways, you know, that kind of thing. I don't think it's necessarily going to go back to what it was. I don't think that's going to happen at all. I think it's going to stay strong. As long as our economy is strong, that our dollar is going to stay strong. Of course, the durable goods report this morning and recent economic reports are telling us that our economy is not as strong as it was last year so far. But also, many economists are saying it's going to look better as the year goes on. We'll see. We'll see. 888-99-CHARTER is our anytime number, and we're ready for your questions right now. You can call. Here's one from a podcast listener.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Genevieve calling from New York, and I am a podcast listener. My question is, I am 27 years old, and I currently contribute the maximum amount I'm allowed to contribute for the year into a Roth 401k. I've also recently cut back on some spending habits and have a little bit of extra money to put away that I'd like to put into a IRA account. I don't know if it would be better to be put into a traditional IRA account or a Roth IRA account. My first instinct would be to put it into a Roth IRA because I'm relatively young and I expect my salary to grow from here on out as I'm currently in the 25th income bracket. However, I don't know if I should put it into a Roth, into a traditional IRA, as I'm also thinking about my retirement income strategy 40 years from now. So if you could kindly give me your opinion on that would be great. Thank you for your thoughts, and I'll listen to your answer in a future podcast. Thanks, bye.
Good question. I do like Roth, especially for young people. She's 27, because you can grow your money tax-free forever, and you never have to take the money out ever until you need it ever and in retirement. In a regular IRA, of course, you have to start taking it at 70 and a half. They have required minimum distributions at age 70 and a half. And therefore, you're forced to take it out. I do like the concept of having both a Roth and a regular IRA. Why I like a regular IRA? Because it's tax deductible now when you put money in. You get the deduction from your adjusted gross income. But if you're already in a lower tax bracket, Roth is much smarter. And you're young, Roth is smarter, in my personal opinion. So I would use Roth. If you start to get in a higher tax brackets, you can reduce some of your tax a little bit by using a regular IRA or a regular 401k. But you have a Roth 401k. There's not too many of those, and I like those a lot, you know, for young people especially. So I think I would stay with Roth. You know, there are restrictions and rules and regulations you need to talk to your accountant about. Because if you make too much money, you know, you can't, you have to just talk to your accountant. I don't want to get into that part of it because I'm an investment guy. Good question, though, and great that you can put that money away. I mean, smart. If you have a mortgage, maybe put it into the mortgage and draw down that mortgage. I like that idea, too, any extra money that you have on a monthly basis. Are we looking at another crash like the NASDAQ did in 2000, since the NASDAQ just recently reached 5,000 again? Remember last time in 2000 when it reached 5,000, that's when it crashed, when the NASDAQ was at 5,000. Now, it's hard to see that we're in a bubble territory like we were then. The numbers just don't add up. I mean, you had 15 years of inflation. The dollar has lost 28%. To the inflation. Don't think the dollar, you know, it's gone up against euro and other currencies, but still lost 28% to inflation. Therefore, in the today's dollars, the NASDAQ at 5,000 really should be, it really is at 3,600 if you consider the loss of value of the dollar. So it's not really at its old high. To get at its old high, it has to be, you know, higher than that. So the economy has also grown by 70% since 2000. So the NASDAQ really should be at about 8,500 if we were going to compare it to 2000 numbers. And if you compare the inflation number and the economy's growth, it should be about 8,500 to be at the same peak. But of course, that was really a high peak. So it doesn't mean the market's not overvalued. The NASDAQ is not overvalued. It is kind of overvalued. And to give you some comparison of stocks, bubble territory. Remember Cisco back in 2000? You know, it was selling at 270 times earnings back then. 270 times earnings. Okay, so let's look at some of our stocks today. Apple, Microsoft are 17 times earnings right now. Google and Baidu are at 35 times earnings. But Facebook is 75 times earnings. But it's not like Cisco was at 270 times earnings. So also another measure that you can see if there might be a bubble territory. Back in the hot old days of 2000, venture capitalists spent $105 billion on startups. $105 billion in 2000 on startups. What did they spend last year on startup? $48 billion. less than half. So that is not low, but it's not. This I'm trying to see if we are in bubble territory, and I'm hard pressed to say we are. I don't think we are. Now, I do think we're overvalued. That I'm not hard pressed to say. But bubble territory? No, I don't think so. Isn't that kind of interesting comparisons, though? I thought so when I read it, wrote it, you know, started to compare those numbers with that back then. Yeah, that's interesting. That's why I'm sharing it with you. When I find it interesting, I share it with you. And, of course, you may not find it interesting, and I'm boring you to death. Sorry about that. Vestal Personal. It's time for Vestal Personal, everybody. The personal finance issues that impact your life. The basics of money management is all about knowing where your money goes. First thing to do is to determine where it went. Okay? I ask this a lot with people. And how much money do you spend a month? And most people just think about costs like mortgage and electrical and all those kind of things. But that's usually not the whole story. If you look at a credit card and you start looking at those little charges here and there, because a lot of times everybody charges everything today, you'd be surprised how much money kind of filters away in these charges. Now, a good tool is to set up a spreadsheet for the last 2, 3, or 4 months to figure out exactly where all your money is, but that's kind of hard. But it's a good way to figure out where the money is going. You can also use Mint.com or Yodlee Money Center. These are different places you can use to try to track your money. These are apps that you can use or websites that you can use to help you. So you just want to get an idea where your money's going, tracking your spending for a period of time to find out what the truth is about where it's going, where your budget is going, where your income filters away. Your goal is trying to save, 10% per month? So try to do that, you got to find out, and if you're saying, I can't, that means what you ought to do is look at your money and what you're spending it on and then cut something out, because you need to save money every month. That's Investor Personal, everybody. If you have a question on this topic or any other money matter that you want to discuss or want me to discuss, just call 888-99-CHART, leave a message, or go to our website at investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin, and it's investtalk.com.
If it's time, maybe it's past time, for a retirement portfolio checkup, why put it off? Each month, Steve picks a couple of days to meet with listeners who would like a second opinion or maybe some new ideas that might make sense for them. If you'd like to meet with Steve in Southern California at our Orange County office, the date is April 15th. To reserve your spot, just go to investtalk.com and click on Make an Appointment. Someone will get right back to you.
Hey, Steve, how you doing? My name is Jake. I'm calling from Chicago. I'm a podcast listener. I had a quick question about a certain ETF. I just opened a Roth IRA. I have a 401k through my employer, but I just opened a Roth account, and I wanted to vote up on VOO, that's the Vanguard ETF. I was wondering your thoughts on, is it a good time to enter the market, or should I hold off until we see prices decrease a little bit? Just wondering your thoughts on that. Thanks a lot for the help, and love the podcast. Thanks.
Well, that's a good question. VOO is the Vanguard S&P 500, and Vanguard's very good because they're very, if you're going to do indexing, Vanguard's very good because they're very inexpensive. Because every ETF has an expense ratio that you pay for those things, and every mutual fund has an expense ratio. You pay for it. Not talking about trading costs. I'm talking about expense ratio. They have expenses inside them. And Vanguard's very low, so that's always good. Now, it's the S&P 500, and the S&P 500 is having trouble at a top, and it's coming off. And so it just recently topped, and now it's coming down the last few days. I think if you wait a little bit, you'll have a better entry point in the next few months coming into the S&P 500. But you got to be brave enough to buy it when it does correct. Now, a lot of people, when they see it going down, they don't pull the trigger until it goes back up, and they wait until it goes back up higher and higher. And, you know, it's difficult because you never know what that is. And what you can do is look at a chart. And, you know, every time it's gone to 100-day moving average, it seems to be bouncing off there. In October, it bounced a little bit low below the 200-day moving average. So, you know, you might want to wait for it to bounce, look, go to the 100-day moving average, buy a little bit then, and then if it goes down to 200, buy a little bit more. See that? the market always corrects. It's just a matter of how much. We've had years where the corrections were very small since 2011. In 2011, the summer of 2011, we had a 19% correction. In the summer of last year, the summer of 2012, the summer of 2013, our corrections were below single digits, low single digits, 5-6%. And we had a tiny one in August of last year of 3-5%. Then we had a bigger one in October of almost 10%. And so, I would wait for those kinds of corrections from, 5-10% minimum and then buy it. Okay, you could get a deeper one. But do I think we're going to move into a bear market this year? No. I don't think so. No one knows. No one has a crystal ball. There is none. I'm just giving you probabilities. The probabilities of a correction are very, very high. So we're going to get a correction. So it's how much? How deep? Well, a normal correction over history is about 10% in a bull market phase. We're still in a bull market phase. 10%. In a bear market, bear markets are 20% or more fall in the stock market. So below 20% is still a correction. We haven't seen one of those, as I said, since 2011. Will we see one? I actually think we're probably going to have a little bit deeper than normal correction sometime this year because it seems like the market's much more volatile this year. Much more volatile. And the time frame was probably in the summer because that's normal when it happens. Normal. So we'll see. So I wouldn't be in a big rush to get into the market. You could put a little bit in. You could dollar cost average in over time and buy it when it goes down. Keep buying when it goes down more. Keep buying when it goes down even more. Dollar cost average in. You could do that. I like that idea. We still have time for your question. 888-99-CHART is how you can get in touch with me right now. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley, and this is Invest Talk.
Good advice. Spread your money around. Stick to a well-thought-out plan for carefully divvying up your money so no single calamity will destroy your portfolio. Want to talk about it? 888-99-CHART is how to get through right now. We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. Many experts caution against investing in specific countries poised for growth. Strategies for investing in the world's fastest growing economies. That's our talking point next time. Be sure to join us on Invest Talk.
And have you been paying attention to the news about Greece lately? It's been in the news. Greece with their new election, their new leaders. This is what populist elections do. They elect people that tell them what they want to hear. Like, oh, we don't want to pay back our loans, and we don't want to have austerity pushed on us from the European Union. We don't want any of that. So let's vote people in to not do it. And, of course, it's not that simple. It's really not that simple. If Greece wants to stay in the EU, which they kind of want to stay in the EU, and they want to use the euro, they just don't want to pay back into the loans, or they don't want to pay it back like they want. And they don't want to change their system to collect better taxes and spur their economy. They want their cake and eat it too, and they're tired of not getting it, or not getting as much as they used to. So that's been in the news recently. ECB, European Central Bank, tells the Greek banks yesterday, that they had to reduce their holdings of Greek debt. Also going to get downgraded. So they have to do that. There's really a lot of contentious negotiations going on right now. And Greece, the leaders of Greece, the new ones, recently threw out the Russia card. Said, well, we're just going to look to Russia to help us out. Of course, Russia is in a deep financial slump themselves because of lower oil prices. And Russia is really only... If you look at Russia, you got to look at Russia as one big oil company. That's how they make their money. Just pretty much like the Middle Eastern countries. So Greece is saying, well, maybe we'll turn away from the NATO nations, the European nations, the Western nations, and turn to Russia to help out. But then again, what are they going to do with all that debt? Are they going to drop the euro? Because that's what they have to do that if they're not going to work with the European Union. They're going to drop? They don't want to drop the euro. They want that currency. What would happen if they started their own currency back up? Hyperinflation, probably. No one's going to want it. It's worthless. And how's that going to help their economy? It's going to crush their economy. They're in a big world of hurt. And there's a lot of negotiations going on. And I understand they're going to run out of money in April. I do believe that the EU will blink and they'll bail them out again. I think this will be the third or fourth bailout. I don't remember which. Let's try to answer one more question before the end of the hour. 888-99-CHARTER is our number.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Justin. This is Henning from Ukraine, listening to you on podcast. Great show as always. My question today is for Enphase Energy, ticker symbol ENPH. I would like to invest in the solar industry, and I think this could be an interesting play. Could you give me a valuation and maybe your take on the company? Thank you very much. Keep up the good work. Bye-bye.
I always worry about him. He calls every so often. I worry about him being in the Ukraine. You know, I worry about that country, you know, the conflict that Russia is supporting on their border, their eastern border. I hope he's okay. This is EN as in Nancy, P as in Paul, H as in Henry. Enphase Energy Inc. designs micro inverter systems for residential and commercial solar system owners. It's a $521 million company, so it's really small. It's a micro cap, but very small. But it does make money. It didn't make money for years and years and years. But in 2014, they made 6 cents a share. 2015, they're going to make 26 cents a share. In 2016, they're scheduled to make 80 cents a share. Sales are growing. Five quarters ago, 16%. 4 quarters up, 26%. 3 quarters ago, 41%. 2 quarters ago, 60%. And now last quarter, up 57%. So sales growth have really taken off. Now, it's $80. It's going to make 80 cents a share, and it's $11.87 stock. Remember, 80 cents a share in 2016. Not this year, but next year. So, how much is 80 cents a share at that growth rate? Well, it's $11.87. I think it's a pretty reasonable price. If those numbers are true, I think it's a pretty reasonable price. I think it's a good price to buy. Very little to no debt. Management is 5%. Mutual funds are buyers. So I kind of like it, you know, on this current weakness that it's having. Maybe you buy it, you know, at $10.50, $11, and it's $11.87. But I think it's, for a micro cap with high growth, looks pretty good to me. I kind of like it. Out of Petaluma, California, by the way. Before we close for the hour, if you're a member in good standing of our InvestTalk Insider program, then you can access a whole library of wealth webinars on topics like keeping risk under control or a fresh look at the manufacturing sector. Sign up for free on investtalk.com. I'm portfolio manager Steve Peasley, and for Justin Klein and everyone at KPP Financial, I thank you for listening today. And let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.